Okay, put us on. Yay!
We're Yay! On! We're finally figuring out how to use this piece of software.
We have no idea what we're doing. We're two devs doing This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez.
And I'm Brian Keller. No, actually...
No, Duncan McKenzie.
So, Duncan, what do you do on Channel 9?
I write code. I'm the dev lead for Channel 9.
And you are... I'm Clint Arcus. I run Coding for Fun and do a bunch of crazy, you know, hardware stuff.
Yes. This is why we have trouble with simple things like controlling slideshows and...
Doing PowerPoint.
Things like that. It's also really bright in here.
But. Okay. So let's get straight into it. Let's see if we get this right. First top of the story is Nick Fillingham's exit interview.
I'm very sad.
Very sad, you know. He's a good friend.
An Australian.
Yeah. So we do enjoy making fun of him for that.
Yes. So yeah, Nick's gone, and if you have a chance, you should check out the exit interview because it's hilarious. It's Charles and Larry. It's almost a roast of Nick a little bit, but it's all good natured, and they talk about all sorts of stuff. About 20 minutes in, and that's how long it goes on for a long time.
Well, Charles was there, so
yeah, it's amazing we didn't go past the hour mark. About 20 minutes in, they're even talking about salt mines and the equipment used to mine salt. And I was so impressed.
I didn't last that long watching the video.
Yeah. Can we bring up the page? Can we do that here? Can we do it? Do you know how? No, maybe we can't.
Yeah.
Okay. If you look down in the comments on that post, you'll see that... Actually, I linked to a time code at one point. And I'll do a Channel 9 post soon showing you how you can do that in the comments yourself. Without having to do a full href and pound time equals, there's a little shortcut in brackets that you can actually just put in a time in minutes and seconds. It'll make a link just like that. Or if it's a Charles video, hours, minutes, and seconds, whatever you need to do.
Yeah, I remember having to do the first iteration of that.
You bet. And we test on Charles video.
Yep.
Okay. So Nick's leaving. We're very sad, but you know, Hotmail's all the better for it.
Yes. Next up. Out with the old, in with the new. We have our new teammate, Golnaz. For those who want to actually know how to properly pronounce it, it is Gol and then Naz the rapper, as she had to put this on a whiteboard because I kept on mispronouncing it.
Golnaz.
So I just started calling her G-Money.
That's probably not right.
I know.
Golnaz. So anyways, there's an interview with her. I enjoy the comments. We're up to... Last I checked, like 36 comments, and I'm impressed, Niners. You stayed mostly polite. It started to go a little downhill here and there, and some people commenting on, well, things. There's racial comments, there's sexist comments. It's everything we expect, but it was actually really, really low-key. I was very impressed at how much people were just really excited to have Golnaz joining the team, and I suspect she was as well. And she might have been just a tiniest bit creeped out by some of their comments. But yes, welcome, Golnaz.
Welcome. Okay, next up. Windows Phone SDK 7.1 RTW. So one thing I want to point out, so the actual OS is called 7.5, the DevTools are 7.1.
But the version on my phone...
is 7.5. The DevTools are 7.1.
Really?
Welcome to confusion.
I thought it said 7.1 screen.
So it's kind of like a Windows 7... If you go to check out the kernel stuff, it's 6.1.
Oh, you know, we were discussing that today. We couldn't remember what it was.
Yeah, so when you see phone tooling 7.1, Mango, think that. Okay? Yeah. So that RTW'd just a bit ago, so you can go to create.msdn.com and download those tools. Good stuff. If you haven't been using it, I mean, you can do background tasks now, audio tasks.
And the emulator is way better.
Yes, you can take screenshots with it.
No diss in the emulator, but the new one, you can simulate location, can do all sorts of stuff.
Simulate the accelerometer.
Yeah, taking screenshots, so you don't need to use the snipping tool and then crop. It just snaps the picture you want.
Yes.
So it's great.
I got very good at Photoshopping, moving it and doing the proper crop.
And then you just put a phone Chrome around the picture, too?
No, it was getting... So you'd get the phone Chrome if you do an alt print screen. Mm.
And then taking the phone Chrome out.
Then you had to go... So then you had to take the phone Chrome out.
I use paint.net for that sort of thing, and people who have Photoshop laugh at me. But I just like that it has the words .net in it. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, next.
Moving along. Okay, so this is a kind of a cool one. It's still Windows Phone 7, but it's an application called PhoneGap. PhoneGap's been around for a little while, and it allows you to build multiple different platforms of apps with basically the same code. So they do a couple different things. They help you with a framework so that you have essentially, if you wanted to build an HTML5-based app for, let's say, an iPhone, Windows Phone 7, Android, things like that, it's essentially a web browser. You're building a web browser, and you're hooking into it and catching events using JavaScript, things like that. They do a lot of that work for you. They just make it really easy for you to get to that basic framework and just do your code. And those people on my team who are HTML JavaScript people, they immediately were sending me links to PhoneGap when we started talking about doing phone apps and stuff like that. And at the time, you couldn't do Windows Phone 7.
Okay.
But now you can. Now you can, and it's amazing and neat. And so it certainly opens up a whole other way of developing these apps. Sort of lends into this whole HTML JavaScript world we've been talking a lot about lately. And if, for whatever reason, you had to push an app to another device, I don't know why you would, but if you had to, you could do both with the same set of code.
I've totally lost my mouse. There we go.
Okay.
Sweet. Next up, Tidal. Sweet Tidal.
Nice.
So this is Windows Phone Icon Maker.
This is a cool one. I like the picture of the dog.
Yes. So if you've ever had to publish a Windows Phone application, there's a bunch of things you need to know. Like for the marketplace, you need a 200 by 200, 173 by 173, and a 99 by 99 icon. Plus, you need for the application itself a 62x62 icon. So it means you need to have the images sized down properly, mm-hmm. scale it, blah blah blah.
Are they all evenly scaled?
Yes, for those they are.
So they're all the same aspect ratio.
Yes,
but five different sizes.
Five different sizes, and it can get kind of interesting to do that properly.
Right.
So Windows Phone Icon Maker does this automatically. This is for those people doing the Windows 8. Stuff as well. It looks like you're going to have to do similar sizing
Well. Okay. So maybe they'll update the app to cover whatever those set of sizes.
Off the top of my head, I don't know. Watch some of the build videos. They cover that. Mm-hmm. Just one of those things to note.
There's some other tricks to those icons too, though, aren't there? Like, I have one on an app that I just use for myself, and it's your Coding for Fun logo. And it's you do, like, what is it, white on black, or is it, you do a transparent background so that the...
Yeah, you can use PNG transparencies to do some cool little tricks. Like, you can, one thing you can do is have a white icon, but have the transparency bust through, so then you get the accent color.
Yeah, that's what I did. So I have this logo here is white, and then the rest of it's transparent. Which in a cruddy image editor just looks like you have a white screen. But when you deploy it, you get the nice, whatever your accent color is, and you get the icons. It's very nice. So, awesome.
Cool.
Moving along.
Nougat.
I honestly don't get this.
What, Nougat?
No, I get Nougat. I don't get deploying using it. I'm not saying it's not interesting as a technology demo, but I don't see how I would deploy Channel 9 with this, or why I would deploy Channel 9 with this. Do you want to sell me on it? No? Okay. So the basic premise, though, so there's been a few demos like this where people do like a SVN, or, you know, they call out to GitHub or something inside their Azure role. And so essentially when they push new code into a certain branch or, you know, a certain part of, you were already sitting shorter than me, and now you're even shorter.
For some odd reason, I felt like I'm too high on the desk.
Okay. It's misleading because he's much taller than me. But anyways.
I wanted to be a slacker.
I feel like, anyways, I can't think of the guy offhand. Crazy guy, Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise.
Is that Tom Cruise?
No.
I'm crazy? Sweet.
Anyways, so there's a few examples of this out there where people somehow use source code control to deploy. The premise of this particular post, which was from Martin Balou's blog, is instead of using source code control, which really isn't meant for deployment, he uses NuGet, which is sort of meant for deployment. It is a deployment engine, so it's an interesting idea. I don't see why I would use it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that.
Okay. But it's neat.
It's neat. It's definitely neat.
And I do like the concept of your own NuGet repositories and pushing, you know, sort of managing your own files using NuGet as a almost like a protocol and moving things around that way versus only using it out of the official, you know, main source.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of neat. Moving along. So, coming up on the weekend. Nope, next week. There are some free conferences on Azure, IE, and Windows Phone. I'll point out, if you can see the times at all, we're talking like 3 to 5 p.m., and that is in... That's an excellent question.
It's in London.
So if you're not running on GMT, then I have no idea what time that is for you.
Is London actually GMT?
Well, I don't know. It's close. It's got to be really close.
Okay.
I mean, that's what it's based on, right? Okay.
Whatever.
I don't think it's officially UTC. I think it's GMT. I think there's a difference there. And obviously, we have no idea.
Okay.
But the point being is that it's not 3 to 5 p.m. Pacific time for us. It's actually UTC or GMT. But if you go to the post, there's actually a link to register. And from there, you go to another post on some event site. And from there, you actually go to a page that says what time zone it is and everything and lets you register for the session. So depending on where you are, this might be a great time. It might be really early, might be late, really depends where you are. But
Tuesday is Azure, Wednesday is Windows Phone, and Thursday is Internet Explorer. And with the Internet Explorer, they talk about HTML5, Ajax, stuff like that, and you know how to get going.
Yeah, awesome.
Next, robotics. Excellent.
Yeah, I'll let him talk. I don't know anything about robots except for what I see on TV.
Or when I go, oh my God, it's alive in my office, and then run out of it. Okay, so this is done by Alfred Thompson, a guy who used to be on my old team, or the blog post. So the robotics team just launched Robotic Developer Studio 4. It's beta.
Okay.
And this is all about the contest to... cool idea for an at-home robot. So it's something like, you know, grand prizes, 10K, sign-up process, blah, blah, blah.
And build a robot.
Get to build a robot.
Okay, that's cool. Do you use, is this like build your own and it's the coding of it is the competition, or is it building the robot itself and coding it? What's the deal?
That's an excellent question. Okay. You know where you can go? Step two, review the official rules.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
Because I don't want to make a blanket statement and that blanket statement be wrong.
Is Alfred in the education?
Yes,
yes. Okay, because I think he used to blog on 10.net.
Totally
could be
possible.
Wrong.
Next.
So this is neat. So when I first looked at them, I was thinking we were talking about sort of new things, a whole bunch of like little libraries and stuff like that, but it's really just going through and exposing cool facts. I would say almost like neat tips and tricks and things you can use in C#. Some of them are .NET. They're more they're not really language specific, and it's cool. It's neat. And the pitfalls side of it is the sort of thing that normally you just have to find out. You have to do it. You have to hurt yourself in some way and struggle with it for hours and hours. Spending some time just reading through this would really probably a lot of it you might know. But you'd see a couple things that are kind of cool and maybe save yourself some pain later on.
Yeah, like, did you watch the tips and tricks session at Build for Visual Studio?
No, I didn't.
There was a bunch of cool little tips and tricks that were in like Visual Studio 20 or 2005 where I'm like, I did not know that.
There were Visual Studio, like IDE kind of tips and tricks.
Like a couple months ago, you showed me the resharper keystroke to get that pop down.
Yep.
There's one for the Visual Studio version of that.
Cool.
Where I'm like, I did not know that.
Well, some of the .NET stuff that I always think is interesting is as we move forward with framework versions, really sort of banal example here, like something like that, is empty or white space? Is null or white space? Is null or empty?
So we
used to not have anything.
Yep.
And then we added the is null or white space, and that was handy, saved you having two part if. Then we added is null or empty. Then we added is null or white space. And so these things come along, and if you're not, you know, digging through IntelliSense or reading blogs about these new things, when you get a new version of the framework, you probably will just keep using the one you were using before.
And if you're nothing wrong with that.
No, it's fine. But at then some point you'll realize that everywhere you were using, you're using, you know, three statements and an if when you could have used one. And I always like to use theirs. So if I'm doing the exact same thing that it seems like they're doing, I assume theirs is optimized. They've
I believe there's a guy with a giant beard that has gone through
and done
a neck beard.
Whoever that is.
The thing that always gets me is switching between, like, especially going to the phone where occasionally you'll lose features.
Right.
Or going to a more, like, you know, dot.
That's an interesting point.
Compact framework stuff. And it's like, where did this
We're
going to
talk about that in a little bit.
Okay.
We're going to talk about exactly what you just said in just a little bit.
And then I go into the fetal position because I really wanted a feature in. Whoopsies.
Okay.
Next.
No, this isn't it. So I'm so excited because we were going to talk about something else. But we'll get to that. So this is actually kind of similar to the pitfalls, tips and tricks, but it's around XML. And some of this is older stuff. I mean, it's been around for a while is what I mean. XSLT kind of stuff and how to work with it. Some of it's just troubleshooting. And it's from the people who know, the people who actually have an idea of how this works. And when you have a problem, you know, their example there in part five is, you know, you get this Stack Overflow exception when you're doing a XSLT. At that point, what do you do? You know, how do you figure it out? And honestly, I've usually used trial and error.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, you're serializing some large object and you're turning around and transforming it. You get an error. I sit down, I remove fields. I remove data types. I change things from complex data types to simple. And eventually it works. And I move on.
Yeah.
This will give you the intelligent way to actually understand what's going on and what's, you know, potentially not working.
Doop. Okay. RESTful links, news, and resource roundups.
I like REST.
I do too.
Yes. REST is the web. No, not that REST.
Oh.
REST is the web. So this is it's just interesting. I mean, REST gets said a lot. Sometimes it's confusing. I've actually seen arguments between people on my team, people on others' team about what is REST. This just helps sort of a roundup of some of the definitions of exactly what it is. I think most definitions of REST are actually probably too narrow. I think people forget that really it's all REST. But this gets into what people mean when they say it. And so if you're confused or if you just want to make sure you're using the terms correctly, place to skim through these links and read up some of them. And then there's actually examples. Like, so if you have an API that uses REST, what would it look like to interact with it? And it gives some samples. So,
okay. Mouse without borders.
This was going to be my pick of the week, but because it's so cool.
So have you ever used Synology?
No.
Or is it Synergy?
Synergy.
Synergy is the KVM one? Yeah. So, I mean, it's very similar to that, or KVM.
Yep.
Or it's similar to a KVM, but not a KVM.
I've used a few things, like shared clipboard between machines. I've used the ones where your mouse moves across in software. Nothing's been all that great. And this is just looks really stable. It does a lot of the things that, you know, we might use multiple programs for, shared clipboard and mouse. And it was done by someone internally, and they're giving it away.
Which is awesome. For those that aren't aware of these programs, or what a KVM is, which I hope everyone here is.
This is beyond a KVM, though.
Yes.
You don't need to switch. No switching.
So what Mouse Without Borders allows you to do is have multiple machines, and you share one keyboard and mouse, where basically you can move your mouse, and it's kind of like dual monitors, where it just works.
Right.
And then you instantly gain focus into the new machine. I used to use this a lot at my old apartment when I had desktop and a laptop, and then I think another laptop. So I just use my primary.
Were you on the couch and using them all from there? Or?
No, so at my desk.
I have two computers at my desk now, and four monitors. So this, although see, they're actually kind of separate. I got everything here, and I got everything over there. So moving the mouse between them is not something I probably would do. Joff.
Yes.
So Joff Knutson, who's on the Channel 9 dev team, and I don't think he's been in any videos, but
maybe,
we'll have to get him on videos.
Interesting
HTML JavaScript guru has
five, six.
I don't know. He's got an entire ring of monitors around him. He was in they did a video at some point. They walked down the hall and introduced new people, and they went in, and you could just see he's in there There's just monitors around him, and he's just beaming. Yeah. He's got radiation all over him. And for like, this,
people
for him...
People make fun of me. He outdoes me when it comes to just pure monitor gear.
And it's pure scavenging. When yeah. somebody's like, hey, anyone need this monitor? You know, it's like 2 seconds later, he's there. So... Anyway, so we'll have to go scan his monitors and install this and see if it helps.
See if he actually likes it. Because he does have... Each one has his own keyboard, too.
But yeah, he does have the ability... He's using, I think, that Synergy to move the mouse around between some of them. But anyways.
Okay.
Continuing along.
Next, WPF 4.5.
Yes. To go along with the framework.
So, yes. So, hey, guess what? WPF actually got revved and... You know, it actually added in new features.
Wow.
Which doesn't surprise me, but shocked a lot of people, evidently.
Yeah, they didn't expect it.
So, you have synchronous and asynchronous data validation stuff, new methods and features on the dispatcher class. You know, there's just lots and lots of stuff. Check out the post by Jonathan here and go through each one. He documents each part in it and makes it, you know, very clear what the new features are and how to implement them.
So I'm a Windows Forms guy still, so...
I should throw my coffee at you right now.
I'm sorry. I've done some Silverlight on the phone, and I've seen things like dispatcher and all the words that you've said, I've seen.
Dispatcher, I'm a server, all dispatcher...
I'm a server code guy. None of this stuff matters to me. He's going to get mad.
I am. Really, so like, if you like HTML and how to do all that stuff, XAML to me is just makes life so much easier when it comes to laying stuff out. I get so angry whenever I have to use Windows Forms stuff and it doesn't line up.
But
like,
I just go anchor. Anyways, I'm going to go do a Windows Forms app right now, something that he has to use just because it'll annoy him.
It's like Magic Folder when I rewrote it and it still hasn't been.
No, because your WPF version, it, I don't know, wasn't magical enough. Didn't do it for me.
Actually, I think we never forced people to use it.
Nope.
And I think I had one or two bugs in it that never got fixed.
It's a sad thing. Anyway, so the Windows Forms version of that app is still happy. Actually, it was in the PTC 10 keynote.
I saw.
They demoed it, and this little, I mean, it's amazing it's not called Form 1, because it's for internal use, so it's kind of rough. It's still got the Windows Form default icon. Did I change that? Anyways, it did. And they brought it up in the keynote. And so, you know, keynotes are kind of polished. Everything's been, designers are involved, and they've done all this work. And then they switched over, and they go, and this is Channel 9's system for video encoding. And they pop up this Windows Forms app, and we all looked a little guilty. Well, really? Mostly those of us who wrote it. But it works, and it works great.
Yes, it does. It does. It works awesome. So, next up, deep dive into the internals of .NET objects and the use of SOS. Now, the ultimate question is, what does SOS stand for?
See, you know, I was going to ask you that. The point, though, here is that this is actually an examination of things like the CLR type system. And at that point, I mean, some of this has been around for a long time. I mean, CLR and how it dealt with objects and types is not new. But this is just a very detailed examination of how those are stored and how memory is handled and things like that. And I didn't read it.
Next.
Okay, so this is cool. This is awesome. So something Clint was saying earlier was that when you're moving and you're going from working in, let's say, a WPF app, because he likes that, to over in a Silverlight app to...
Which I also like.
Yeah, to potentially a WinRT app, or, you know, you're moving around and you're still in .NET, but the set of classes and functions available to you is changing. And one of the things that's somewhat annoying about that is that if you make a class library and you make it targeting .NET 4
yes.
full edition, but there's absolutely nothing in it that wouldn't work in Silverlight because you just didn't use anything. Go try to use it from Silverlight app, and you cannot.
So what I typically ended up doing was creating a new project
yes.
that of that type and yes. then doing a shadow copy to all of them,
but,
and potentially even compiler flags, and
but you don't have to
find
do that.
The overlapping stuff. And what, this is magic.
What this post is about is the idea
of software.
The magic of software, exactly. So what this is about is basically being able to create a single library and flag it as you want it to be portable. You have to specify what you want to target and things like that, but it will essentially create the versions that you need across. The different platforms. I actually, I didn't look at the output. I don't know if it's creating, I think it's creating multiple assemblies at that point.
Okay.
But regardless, for you, one set of code, you don't have to have different projects with different settings. One set of code, and when you compile and build, you get reference assemblies that will work across all these different places.
Awesome.
Yes. I actually think if you're creating a really sort of basic library, a base layer library, remember that weather thing I did for stuff that hasn't been announced or released yet?
Yes.
Anyways, there's nothing in there that's specific to WPF, which I think was the target at the time. But if I want to turn around and use it from the phone, it just got the weather. It's not a big deal. You got the weather for a lat long.
Actually, technically, we have announced it.
Have we?
Yes.
Okay.
We announced it at build.
It's for the dashboard of that car.
Yes.
But the point being is that we were targeting WPF, and if I want to turn around and now have use the exact same code with the GPS in the phone to do a weather app, it's perfect. The code does everything you need, but you can't use the library. You'd have to take my code and recompile. But if I use this, you wouldn't have to.
See, I just used a couple key classes and made everything async for me. And then it just worked across WPF and Silverlight.
Yes. I'm just saying, this is cool.
Next. Okay. The Channel 9 highlight of Dev 11 developer preview, the concurrency visualizer.
Yes. So concurrency, it's a big deal because multi-core, multiple threads, and everyone screws it up. Not everyone. He doesn't. Unless it's involving motors, and then when you screw up concurrency, it's bad. But
hey, I thought I did pretty good. I operated 4 motors independently.
You did, and then when you fixed it later, and it got so much better.
I just mounted the wheels backwards. I'm sorry.
Yes, that actually wasn't a concurrency problem, but it seemed like it to me because they're going opposite directions at the same time.
So like
the point being though is that, and this is something that Charles often talks about. It is a Charles video. Surprise.
Yes.
Concurrency, big
Which
deal.
Is why it's
47
minutes.
It is. It's 47 minutes long. Anyways, it's tricky. And running into race conditions, trying to make sure things are thread safe. And there have been a lot of things over the years to make it easier. Background tasks for
parallel tasks.
Yep. The .NET parallel framework. And then there's the parallel task library. All those things. Basically, this helps you debug it. It helps you see when you are doing things simultaneously. I assume it's looking at that point at when you're accessing the same class from multiple threads, things like that. And it lets you look at it in a visual way because
we're visual people.
Visual is good. I like visual things. It's on Channel 9. You can check it out. It's got really high ratings. 5 stars. 11 people.
Okay. The Visual Studio Toolbox using Link to XML to query datasets on the web. So this is done by Robert Green. So it's all about just, basically getting large sums of data in and then using Link to help, parse it. Now,
If you're kind of old school, and I still do this, and I feel bad, I will get the stream. Sometimes I'll pull it right back into a string, or I'll do it from the stream. Depends on the size, right? And I'll read it into an XML document. Not an X document. An XML document. Old school. This is showing you the right way to do it, and sort of the... It's not actually that new. But these toolbox videos are good in that they show you what I consider fundamentals.
Yeah.
Like a really core something that you want to do. And honestly, once in a while when I use XML document and I feel bad, I think, I should do this with linked XML. I'll go onto Bing and I'll search around and I'll find somebody who did it and I'll look at their code and say, oh, that's great. And I get a start because I'm lazy. And I'll use it. This essentially is that. It walks you through how to do it, explains it all. So if you have anyone who needs to do a lot of work with XML, if it's RSS, they might want to use the syndication classes. But RSS, this is quite good for that too. Especially if you're parsing namespaces that aren't normal in RSS, like Channel 9s. Point them at this video and they can watch it all the way through. Not you, because I know you already know how to use it. But if you have a friend who needs help with
it,
they can take a look at this video and they're set.
Yeah, and then, the nice thing also about doing stuff like where you're querying it is I know we've gotten a couple of requests when we do changes or people make assumptions on our RSS feeds.
Yes.
And, at times if we change our code, guess what? Their assumptions break because we had to alter our
part of that is the key to treat XML like XML, right?
Yeah.
You need to understand namespaces. You need to be looking at, I need this certain element. The order of the element shouldn't be important. That's actually what came up recently.
Yes.
At some point, I don't know what I did, but I moved, I think it's no longer consistent. The smooth streaming manifest in our RSS feed, because we put all of our media types in there, moves around. It always has the same type on it, and it's always in the same block. So from a semantic point of view, it's in the same place. But if you were parsing with, let's say, doing substrings.
The person was assuming it was always the first element.
Right.
And
that's not necessarily true. We make no effort to make that true. We could, but XML doesn't work like that. So using linked XML, you kind of abstracts you from anything to do with, you know, looking at how it is in the actual file.
Okay, next.
So my pick of the week. Since I couldn't do the mouse without borders, because we put it in the main deck. This is some cool stuff to do with HTML5. HTML5, and we've heard about this for a while, but it's getting more and more consistent now, so it's getting interesting. It enables offline scenarios.
Ooh.
So the example is a recipe app, but let's think Channel 9. Let's think about Channel 9. So you're at home, you're at the office, you, let's say, have a queue of videos you like.
Yes.
You have a reminder from Outlook. Awesome. You have a queue of videos that you want to watch. And you basically go say, I want to go offline. And maybe you don't have to do it explicitly. Maybe we just sort of get you ready for it all the time. But when you do that, using, there's different things. So App Cache, if we wanted to dump the video files, they have a database format, IndexedDB. So if we wanted to actually keep structured data. It's like a little tiny SQL compact kind of style thing. But we could dump data into that. And now you go to channel9.msdn.com when you're disconnected. You're on the train. You're on the plane.
Yep.
You're on a bus. You're in a car. Any of these things. And boom, you actually still get our UI because we've brought down the images, the JavaScript we need, everything.
Yep.
And we are somehow aware of the fact that we have these five videos offline. We don't have anything else, but we have the metadata for the other, you know, 1,000 videos. So you're browsing around, and then, you know, there's things you have to do to handle this, and the post goes into it. And this is a post on the IE blog, by the way, a link down below. And essentially, we could have it pop up a page saying, oh, I'm sorry, you'd have to go online to view this. Or we could actually even have a completely different UI in offline mode, right? So we could build up a page that is just the Channel 9 offline, and we only know about, let's say, five videos, but it's still our UI, still our code. And instead of you having to pull all these videos into a folder and just fire up, you know, Zoom,
it just works.
Yeah, you're just on Channel 9. So it's cool. And we talked about this in the dev team stand-up today, because my problem with HTML5 features is that we can't really use them yet, because not everyone's using HTML5.
It's getting there.
It's getting there. But now I think what's happening a lot is that when we look at things like Windows 8, and people are looking at Metro apps, you have a known entity there.
Yep.
I know it supports HTML5, I know it supports these features, and I can actually build something that will work offline or online, uses all these features, and the same style of code, the same technologies would work in a web app once your audience, whatever that audience is, once your audience has the HTML5 support.
Cool.
It's cool stuff.
Okay, my pick of the week, Mango.
Yes.
Woo! So Mango started shipping, so, you know, just start plugging in your phones into your computer, booting up Zune, and it's a slow rollout, as the Windows Phone blog talked about, and they go in and say kind of why it's a slow rollout. So when you start shipping, you know, basically an OS update.
Yep.
We've tested it internally. I've been running Mango for, you know, who knows how long. And it's one of those things where you kind of want to, you know, seed it to a couple people. Is everything okay?
Yeah.
Seed it to a bit more.
In the wild, you know, you got different phones, you got different people, different network conditions. And so some sort of trickling rollout, certainly it's good for everybody because it means that that other guy will find the problem. And you're like, oh, I'm so jealous. He got it first. Maybe he's going to be the one to find the problem, and you'll get the fixed everything awesome.
Yeah.
Though, so far, I mean, everything's running really smooth.
Yep.
I got updated. I'm not getting a special build or anything, and mine's been updated.
Yep.
I think it's definitely happening.
So yeah, it's going to slowly roll out. And if you're like, hey, why haven't I gotten my update yet? There is a Where's My Mango update, just like there was Nodo.
Right.
Looking at it, it seems like...
It's the same page. Isn't it the same page? I think they just updated the page for the new release.
Yes, and basically plug in your phone, start up Zune, and you're good to go. You do have to upgrade to Zune 4.8, I believe.
Now, that actually will happen sooner. So I was seeing that prompt for a while on my wife's desktop. Once again, not any special program or anything. She got the Zune 4.8 update like a week ago, and she hasn't got the Mango update yet. But so that'll be the first step. You'll see that, and then I actually think your phone alerts you.
You get a little alert.
And it says, "Hey, there's an update. You might want to do stuff.
You might want to click OK."
That was my Mango phone.
Okay. Well, that's it. I totally screwed that up.
You didn't get the music.
That's terrible.